This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Tanine Bradford, and on behalf of the COPS office, I'd like to introduce you to Associate Professor Dr. Amy Watson at the University of Illinois Chicago. She's here to talk with us today about procedural justice. Dr. Watson, from your research, how are the majority of police encounters experienced by persons who have mental illness? And can you tell us why this is significant?
Sure. In the work that we've done where we've talked to people with serious mental illness about their police encounters, the thing that really comes through is that they feel extremely vulnerable when they have police encounters. People talked about just being really afraid that they could be arrested for, you know, when they didn't think they were doing anything wrong, or they could be beaten up, or they could be killed. And they feel very, very vulnerable in those situations and very scared. And I think this is really important for police officers to kind of be aware of, because if they're intervening on someone who's very, very scared, if they can kind of calm down the situation and make the person feel a little bit more secure, these situations will go much more smoothly. And you know, if you think about someone who's really agitated and really frightened and a bunch of people close in on them, they may be scared for their life and they may fight back, but if they feel more comfortable and things are slowed down a little bit and they feel safe, then they're better able to follow instructions, they're better able to cooperate with what the police need them to do. So I think it's really important that police officers understand just how vulnerable people feel in those situations.
From your findings on how persons who have mental illness perceive their encounters with law enforcement, can you describe why it is important to apply procedural justice to those encounters?
Yeah, what people have told us is, one, they really do attend to how they're treated. And if they feel like they're treated well and respectfully and kind of like human beings, and they're given a chance to tell their side of the story, they report that, you know, that they cooperate more in those situations, and they're more willing to, you know, do what the police need them to do, and they just feel much more comfortable, and they feel less vulnerable if they feel that they're being treated with respect by someone who has some concern for their well-being. Therefore, you know, the police officers that we've talked to in our studies as well talk about when they walk into a situation that they know is a mental health-related call, that, you know, they're ready for anything. Anything could happen. Sometimes things kind of blow up really quickly, so they're sort of on guard and maybe a little bit fearful as well. But if they can take a different approach, they're much more likely to gain cooperation and be working with someone who's really kind of calmed down and better able to do what they need to do, which improves the safety for everybody in that situation. And, you know, the situation may be resolved more effectively, and that person walks away with feeling better about the police in general, which could impact cooperation in future encounters as well. So I think using procedural justice approaches with anybody is really important, but I think it's particularly important with this population that may feel especially vulnerable. And in these calls that police officers find to be particularly problematic and difficult as well.
So what does law enforcement gain by practicing procedural justice?
I think they gain many things. One is that they gain better cooperation in that immediate encounter. So they may be able to de-escalate a situation and resolve it much more easily. It may take a little bit longer, but they gain that cooperation immediately. And they also, there's some thinking, we weren't able to test this in the data that we had, but we're hoping to in a upcoming study. But there's some thinking that if someone feels they're treated with procedural justice in an initial police encounter, that they may be more likely to cooperate in any subsequent encounters and with the law and law enforcement. So they may gain a longer-term effect as well. The other thing is that, you know, the more people feel that police officers treat them with procedural justice, the more legitimate they view police officers, and that's really important to the police departments to be viewed as legitimate, and they get better public cooperation that way too. So the police gain quite a bit by practicing procedural justice.
With understanding that, what are 5 procedural justice tools law enforcement can use when responding to persons with mental illness?
Well, when you think about procedural justice, it oftentimes gets broken down into a couple sort of components. One is voice. So giving people an opportunity to tell their side of the story and actually listening to them. So allowing someone to be heard, it goes a long way to gaining their cooperation. So that's one piece. Another piece is just treating someone with dignity and respect. So not superficial politeness, but really showing the person that you're treating, viewing them as a human being, treating them with respect and concern. That's extremely important because a lot of people are used to being treated disrespectfully or like they're less than human. So if a police officer comes in and really shows respect and concern, you know, the person will experience that encounter much more positively and be more likely to cooperate. Again, trust is very important as well. So if the person trusts that the officer is generally concerned about that person's well-being, that's very important as well. And those are sort of three components. It gets broken down into different components depending on what literature you look at. Another thing that's come up that's related to procedural justice is it's very helpful for people if the officer kind of tells them what's going to happen. So instead of pouncing on someone and handcuffing them, explaining that, you know, I need to put you in my car and I need to cuff you before I put you in my car, and just giving people some information so they understand what's happening to them. You know, particularly if someone is really experiencing a crisis and is really agitated, it's really helpful to slow things down, give people information, and, you know, allow them to ask questions or tell their side of the story. And that way, you know, these situations can really be handled, they go much more smoothly. There's less likelihood that an officer may be injured, that the cuff subject may be injured, and it's more likely that the person will be able to cooperate and do what the police officer needs them to do. And this is true even with someone who's experiencing pretty severe psychotic symptoms. There's research that's looked at that even people who are, you know, in the midst of a psychotic episode do recognize how they're being treated, and it does matter to them. So if the officer does allow the person to have voice, treats them with dignity and respect, you know, kind of slows things down and takes the time, and then also expresses genuine concern for that person's well-being, and then, you know, sort of guides them by telling them what's going to happen, what needs to happen, that type of thing, it's very useful.
Very important information. So what advice would you give to law enforcement executives on implementing procedural justice in their departments?
I think it's important to train officers in procedural justice techniques. And I think, you know, some of it's training. We can teach officers that these are things that seem to help in terms of engaging with different populations, particularly vulnerable populations, and provide them with, you know, some explanations of why this will make your job easier. You know, officers get a lot of training, but they need to know why they're getting it and what the benefit is for them. And I think if they use it or if they've been using it all along, they'll kind of understand that this really helps them deal with different types of people. But they can't just do the training. I think police departments need to, within their organizational structure, then provide supports for officers taking this approach. And that could include making sure that, you know, if they're responding to a mental health crisis call, that they have the time, you know, to listen to the person, to slow things down, to de-escalate stuff, and they have the time to do these interactions in a different way. One of the things officers have told us is sometimes they'll go to a call and they'll have a stack of calls that they need to respond to, and a supervisor kind of trying to hurry them along, so it's very difficult to take the time to really take a more procedural justice approach. So I think departments need to recognize the importance of it and then make sure that structurally they allow for officers to use these tools. And there needs to be recognition when officers do use these tools and things go well. They don't get a lot of rewards for handling calls that go smoothly. You know, they might get in trouble if things don't go well, but it's hard to reward somebody for something that doesn't happen, like having to use force or that type of thing. So I think there needs to build in some incentives and recognition when officers do this well. The other thing is departments need to treat officers with procedural justice as well. And I know Tom Tyler's done some writing and some work with police departments in particular on procedural justice within the organization so that officers feel like their department is treating them in a procedurally just manner as well. That, you know, things are fair, things are transparent, that they have a voice, that type of thing. So that then they're in a better place than to take these tools out into the community in responding to calls.
Are there any last minute thoughts around a procedural justice that you'd like to share and offer to the field?
Just thinking about the interviews that we did with people and the things that they told us about their interactions with police officers. And, you know, they told us about interactions that they experienced really negatively. You know, sometimes these were interactions where they were just stopped on the street and they felt they weren't treated well, versus interactions where they were treated very positively, even if they resulted in an arrest or an involuntary transport to the hospital. And I think it's important that, you know, people do, with serious mental illness, even if they're quite symptomatic, they recognize how they're treated. And some of the things that they really mentioned as related to positive interactions were, you know, the officer really listened to me and let me, you know, express my side of the story. Some people talked about the officer that may have been transporting to the hospital, having a conversation with them and maybe offering the person a cigarette or just treating the person like a human being and sort of reducing a little bit of the distance so that the person felt more comfortable. You know, we had one person tell us that, yeah, the officer said he had an Italian name, but he was Irish. So, like, low-level personal disclosure, where it was more of a interaction between human beings, was really useful to them in terms of how they experienced those interactions. The other thing is time. If officers are allowed to slow things down, then they can use these tools. And, you know, sometimes if they walk into a situation and they're on guard, they're worried about what's going to happen, there may be a rush to sort of get it over with. But we're really seeing in some of the procedural justice literature, but then also in some of the other literature on crisis intervention teams, is that if things can be slowed down and officers can use these new skills, that they can be much more successful in effectively and safely responding to some of these crisis calls.
Dr. Watson, on behalf of the COPS office, thanks so much for providing us with your expertise and your time.
You're welcome, and thank you.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice COPS Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.
The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.